scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla, rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, we are underway on another day. Happy Tuesday. It is Tuesday, December 10th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. What's up, Vicks?
I'm just chilling. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, man. Good. I'm doing well. Ready for another fun hour of Flames Talk. We'll dive in on our daily Flames Roundtable a little bit later on this hour with Derek Wills. But I feel like our next topic might get things going a little bit on the text line. Usually my intuition about our text line has been right recently about some of our topics. On Monday, you and I did our final mailbag of 2024 on Monday's program. Hopefully.
Allegedly.
We're calling it our final mailbag of 2024. We shall see. And we got some questions about the Flames going after another center in a trade between now and the trade deadline. And one of the names that was brought up a few times was Dylan Cousins of the Buffalo Sabres. Part of the reason why is because of our good buddy Elliot Friedman. This was Elliot on the latest 32 Thoughts with Kyle Bukauskas. This is available wherever you get your podcasts right now. It was released on Monday. And they got into an entire conversation about the reeling Buffalo Sabres and the frustrated nature of that group of fans. And Kevin Adams did a news conference. And they got into a conversation about how it seems like whether it's Jack Eichel or Sam Reinhart or Linus Ullmark or countless other players who have left Buffalo and then they go and have a ton more success. How come that has been the case? And then all of a sudden, Elliot, right near the end, drops this little nugget of information.
The Buffalo fans right now, they're all over Dylan Cousins. They're all over him. And I do think teams have asked about Cousins this year. And if I'm Adams and the Sabres, I'm worried, like, if we trade him, does he become the next guy?
The next guy being the next former Sabre to go on and have a ton of success elsewhere is what Elliot is referring to. So let's get into it. Teams have been making calls on Dylan Cousins. He's been moved from center to the wing on a team that is really struggling to find their footing. You know, Tage Thompson hasn't been as good. Peyton Krebs has been up and down the lineup. Dylan Cousins was their number two center for the longest time. He's been moved to the wing on a line now with Krebs, who's been bumped up to the number two center. Would this be a good fit for the Flames? Is Dylan Cousins the type of target they should have their crosshairs on? 960-960 on the text line, and you and I, let's delve into it. First of all, I think that, yeah, they're from a straight-up hockey perspective, more than anything else, I think it would be a good fit. I do think the Flames would be a team or should be a team, and I think, you know, are a team that would be interested in him. And at the very least, the Flames would recognize and do recognize that there would be a fit there, and this is the type of player they're looking at. Whether or not he's actually available or not, I don't know. Whether or not the Sabres are actually shopping him, I don't know. But from a straight-up hockey perspective, 23 years old, right shot center, 30 goal scorer two seasons ago, like, this is a perfect fit from a hockey standpoint for the Flames. Before going into any of the other extraneous stuff like contract and trade cost, like, from a hockey perspective, Dylan Cousins makes nothing but sense for the Flames, does he not?
Well, you laid it out there, and if you were to build a checkbox of items or criteria that you would want your next center for the Calgary Flames to have or to be, one, you want 25 or younger, I would imagine. You want that age demographic. Cousins checks that box at age 23. Right shot, we know they don't have a right shot center on the NHL roster. I'm not sure who's going to be the next right shot center in the organization coming up, and Dylan Cousins shoots right. He's got size, 6'3", 207 pounds. Check that box off, And as you mentioned, you don't have to look too far into the past. Just a couple seasons ago, he was a former 31-goal scorer, 68-point player in an 81-game schedule for him. So when you just take the 30,000-foot view of what Dylan Cousins is and what he could be and how he fits in the Flames organization, absolutely he's a guy that checks basically every single box that you have outside of, okay, what's it going to cost?
Right.
And then both monetarily with his contract and acquisition costs as well. So, yeah, he checks every box from my perspective of what the Calgary Flames should be looking for their next center.
And honestly, decent chance the Flames are one of the teams that have made a call on.
You have to do that due diligence, whether or not he's a player you're all in on or you're dipping a toe in. You have to do that due diligence.
Well, and I know that that's been a player the Flames have liked in the past, and there is all. Conroy has been on record, and we've talked plenty about how he's looking for a young center, and Cousins fits everything that the Flames are looking for. Right shot, 23 years old, and even now you could make the argument maybe a little bit of a market inefficiency there. So I think there's a very strong chance the Flames are one of those teams who have given a call to the Buffalo Sabres, and if that's the case, good on them, and I believe that would be the case. It just makes too much sense for that not to be the case. So then the next question becomes, okay, we both believe it's a good hockey fit, but then what? What does that asking price look like? What does the asking price look like compared to the contract they're bringing back? All that type of stuff. The thing that I would want to look at first is, what are you getting in the player?
Right.
Because since that 68-point season, 31 goals, 68 points from 2 years ago, the points went down a little bit into the kind of high 40s the year afterwards, and he's struggling this year. What, 13 points in 28 games?
Yes.
That we're talking
six
about
goals,
right now?
6 goals, 7 assists in 28 games.
So he's been a productive player in the past. He spent most of that year where he scored the 31 goals playing center for Buffalo as a 21-year-old, but in the two seasons since has dropped a little bit. Now, I think that there's probably a good argument to be made that the Sabres have been a bit of a disaster, so that probably is going to hurt. I mean, Tage Thompson hasn't had a year like his career year. Other guys haven't as well. But what are the Flames getting? Like, what is Dylan Cousins? Is Cousins a guy who scored 30, or is Cousins a guy who can be a 30-goal scorer going forward? And that would be my first big question. What are you getting in this player? Are you getting a potential number 2-1B center? Or are you getting a guy who's more of a middle-of-the-table center? And that's kind of what my big question is. I don't know the answer to it. The Flames have got their analytics and their scouting department and all that type of stuff. They'd have their own scouting on him. I'm just curious as to what he is as a player and what the Flames see him as a player.
I knew we were going to talk about this, so I reached out to some people out east, and I reached out to one individual scout out in the east that is not close to the Sabres, doesn't work for the Sabres, but is in that sort of realm. And I asked point blank, can Dylan Cousins still be a number one center? The response I got was, anything is possible, but that ship has likely sailed. There hasn't been near enough consistency in his game to show that he can be that player. And I naturally follow up with, okay, well, what's been the problem in his game the last 100 or so skates he's gone out? Since that 30-goal season where netted himself a really nice contract and everything looked to be trending exactly as you would expect them to trend for a player that was a 7th overall pick in 2019. And a lot of it came back to raised expectations with that 30-goal season, not processing the game as well as he could that we saw in that 30-goal season. He's looked a bit off. He's not getting himself into those proper positions to impact the game. And this person specified at both ends of the ice. So it's not just a, okay, your production is tailed off because you're focusing defensively. The general consensus that I absorbed from this individual last year felt like a slump, but it's carried over and it's been a cause of concern. It's not a coach related thing. Dylan Cousins has had multiple coaches to sort of figure this through. Lindy Ruff does put a lot of demand on his centers, and we've seen Cousins. And as you mentioned, Tage Thompson is another name that's not floated out in the rumor mill coming out of Buffalo, but as a player that might be moved to the wing to help alleviate some of the things that Ruff asks of the centers, just to get those individuals back on track and feeling good about their games. But at the end of the day, the big riddle to all this in terms of even figuring out, okay, well, what does one pay for a Dylan Cousins in a trade? You have to be able to answer, okay, well, what are you certain you're getting? Are you getting the guy that you're seeing? Do you think there's a reclamation project here or a market inefficiency, as I love it when you put it that way? What is Dylan Cousins? That's the biggest question in determining what do you have to pay to get him.
Yeah, and I think that's fair for a few of the texters who have asked, you know, why are we talking about Cousins? Well, I think we know Elliot Friedman at this point. I think we know that when he puts something out there on 32 Thoughts, he's not just doing it for fun. Yeah. There's always something behind what Friedge says. He's too smart. He's too good. He's too connected. And he talks to too many people every day for those things to just be like, oh, I'm throwing stuff against the wall. That's not – Elliot Friedman doesn't put his name in the middle of 32 Thoughts unless there is some sort of feel that he could be in a conversation. Do I believe the Sabres are actively shopping Cousins? No, but I think if enough teams are making calls on a guy that has been moved to the wing, that is struggling, that is having a down year, I think at the very least where there's a little smoke, there's a little fire. So that's why we're talking about him. We're not hearing the same thing. Somebody's like, why aren't you talking about Tage Thompson then? Because Elliot Friedman hasn't floated Tage Thompson as a guy that people are making calls on. That's why. And again, when Friedman puts something on 32 Thoughts, it's not just thrown against the wall for fun. So that's why we're talking about it. The contract for Cousins, does the fact he's got 5 years at $7.1 million scare you off in the slightest or make you think twice about this? Because for me, at first I was like, oh, well, there's still like more than $35 million left on the contract for 5 years. And then I immediately said, who cares? The cap's going up. The Flames have zero cap worries right now. That 5 year deal at $7.1 million is almost not a non-factor, but a close to non-factor when talking about his fit with the Flames. I'll say this, it doesn't scare me off in the slightest. It would not impact what I'd be willing to pay for the guy in a trade. I don't really see that as being a significant factor in this conversation.
If anything, it might strengthen Calgary's ability to be one of the players in talking to Buffalo about acquiring Cousins, just simply because of the ample cap space that right. They have. And they don't necessarily need to send anything back to absorb that full cap hit. And perhaps as a result, you get Cousins for a little bit of a discount, because to be perfectly honest, over the past two seasons,
yeah, no salary retention needed there.
No,
right?
No salary retention. No, you take on a bad contract, we'll take on your longer term contract that isn't showing its worth at the moment. It's a calculated gamble, but one, it's not my money. Aaron Vickers isn't cutting a check to Dylan Cousins to come play for the Flames, so I'm more apt to spend that money. But two, when you look at how the salary structure for the Flames shakes out over the course of the next couple of seasons, the next five seasons, four seasons, you're more than able to do the things you have to do to work around this as you try to technically rebuild Cousins into the player that might be a 30-goal scorer again.
They're talking about the cap being as high as $100 million or
potentially
more
potentially another
year.
5% bump or something along those lines before the PA gets involved?
Yeah, like we're talking about a significant salary cap bump between like not just the big increment we were expecting, like even larger than what we were expecting is on the table and is something that's going to be discussed here over the next number of months. So I mean, $7.1 million for a 23-year-old guy who's got 5 years left on his deal.
Who might be your number two center.
And who knows? Maybe it can be even like, yeah. Do I think Cousins is a generational number one center? Like your franchise number one guy? Probably not. Do I think that he can be a heck of a guy who can maybe project to a number two, 1B situation? Yeah, absolutely I do. I think that potential is there. And you don't score 31 goals as a 21-year-old by accident. Now, there's a lot that happens after your breakout season, and sometimes we have seen we've seen a drop-off in his production fairly significantly, especially this year. How much of that is a product of the player? How much of that is a product of the team and the environment and how bad things have been in Buffalo? I don't know, but you certainly wonder what a change of scenery and being in a new spot, especially for a guy who played in his entire junior hockey career, you know, 2 hours away in Lethbridge. You wonder what that could do for a guy like Cousins, who is struggling on the offensive side of things, like many other Sabres are. That's why I ask, is this a product of Dylan? Is this a product of the team? Probably somewhere in the middle, but right. To what extent does a brutal Buffalo team play into his drop-off, you know?
Yeah, because you're looking at it, 22, 23, 31 goals, 68 points. Last season, 18 goals, 47 points. This season, he's projected to be another 18-goal season down to 39 points. But you do wonder, and we heard it in that clip, how many players at varying levels of, you know, Jack Eichel was probably a top five, top 10 player in the NHL when he left Buffalo. So it's not like he blossomed outside of the Sabres organization. But we heard Friedman run through the list. Reinhardt's in there too. You don't have to look far to go, okay, it seems like when guys leave Buffalo, they're like, still just as good.
O'Reilly.
Or better.
Reinhardt, Eichel, Linus Ullmark turned into a Vezina Trophy winner. Like, guys have left Buffalo and have turned into pretty good players.
So the reverse Buffalo bump.
There's three right there that have gone on to win Stanley Cups very shortly after leaving the Buffalo Sabres. Ryan O'Reilly leaves Buffalo. He wins a cup with the Blues. Sam Reinhardt wasn't quite as quick, but not that far after he gets traded to Florida. Wins a Stanley Cup with the Panthers. Jack Eichel wins a Stanley Cup in his first full season away from Buffalo. So, like, it is something that the Sabres are like, well, hold on a second. Maybe, is it us or is it them? Maybe it's us. It's not you, it's me. Is this a, yeah, it is you. Like, you wonder.
You're the problem, it's you.
And if you're Kevin Adams and the Sabres, you're like, okay, maybe we are the problem. So how do we fix that, and how do we make it so that we don't trade a guy away, he becomes great elsewhere, and then we got egg on our face again? Maybe they're not, as to Elliot's point, maybe they're not as interested in moving a guy like Cousins for those reasons, but if you're the Flames, that doesn't mean you don't keep trying.
Well, and at the same time, too, if you're the Buffalo Sabres and you're Kevin Adams and you're going, okay, well, if I give this another year, what's he worth in another year if this doesn't turn around or this doesn't pick up or there's an uptick or there's something tangible you can point to that he's on the rebound, then you've lost value even further on your asset and now you're eating pennies on the dollar as opposed to getting some sort of return. From the Calgary Flames perspective, I would take a shot. Again, we have to talk acquisition costs.
Well, and that's the last point that last part that we got to dive into.
But
right?
Like, just from an abstract sort of perspective, he would be exactly the type of player I would be knocking on the door saying, hey, what might it take? Out of curiosity, hey, if you were to do this, not saying you're going to, but let's talk hypothetical here. If you're going to do this, how much am I going to need to spend? Because we'd like to have a conversation.
And you can almost guarantee that Conroy has had that conversation already. Like, you can almost, like, we know he's looking for a center. We know he's always making his call. And I'm not just saying Conroy. You can imagine there's like,
probably 31 other ones that wouldn't sneeze at a 6'3", right shot, 23-year-old former top 10 pick.
Everybody's talking to everybody all the time anyway.
Right.
So I think there's probably a pretty good idea of what the Preds are looking for. It's not the Preds, what the Sabres are looking for in terms of a guy like Cousins or other. Like, that's just part of your job of being a general manager. So my question, so if we have checked the box, yes, from a hockey standpoint, he's exactly what they're looking for, or at least fits the mold pretty closely for what you're looking for as the Flames. And number two, the contract situation doesn't scare you away and doesn't kind of shy you off or say, whoa, we don't know if we want to take on that five remaining years at $7.1 million. The next step and the final conversation then becomes, okay, what the hell does this cost to bring him in? What type of acquisition price is Cousins going to be looking at? And again, that clip from Elliot that we played off the top of this conversation leads you to believe the Sabres might be holding on to this guy and looking at, you've got to knock our socks off on a deal if we're going to move him. What type of deal does it take? You know, I've heard from a few different people now that I would be, you know, quite trusting of, that Sabres aren't looking for a rebuild type move
right
here.
They're done with that.
They've been rebuilding for 13 years. So if you're the Flames, I don't know if Hanzek and a first and something else is going to get the job done, right? I wonder if you're talking about the Sabres need some help right now. Are they looking at a Rasmus Anderson saying, hey, hold on a second. You know, if we're going to be moving a guy like Cousins, we need some help right now. Is that the type of player they're looking at? Do they need a guy like Sharon Govich and something else to, you know, and maybe also the first round pick? And like, is that maybe more what the Sabres are looking for? And honestly, I don't know. Where do they need more help? Do they need more help on the back? Do they need more help up front? I mean, they've already gone out and acquired Byram. They've already drafted Power and Dahlin first overall. They've got Yoki
Samuelson back there too.
I think they've turned into a pretty decent looking blue line, at least when it comes to their personnel hasn't paid off. At forward, they've got some really promising players from Tage Thompson to Cousins, who we're talking about, and Alex Tuch's been a nice fit, and Paterka's like they've got a group of forwards that you say, okay, they go and pluck McLeod out of Edmonton, so on and so forth. Like they've got some good things. Where are they looking to augment the most?
It's a good question, because I would just adamantly say not futures. They're done waiting for
guys to develop.
Like, I don't think prospect and a pick gets it done at the same time.
An impact NHLer. So if they're looking for a guy that helps them right now, where do they need it the most? At forward or on defense?
If I were them, I wouldn't necessarily be picky, just from the sense of if you added a top four defenseman, that bumps Yoki Haru down to the bottom pair, which I would be in favor of, hypothetically.
People love Yoki Haru.
I'm not as big on him, to be perfectly honest with you, and that goes back to part of his junior days, part of watching him in Chicago. I look at what they have up. Like, to me, on paper, this isn't a bad Buffalo Sabres team. The problem is the sum of their parts aren't giving out the output that they should. When you collectively put this group together, having said that,
Just before you go there, I was talking to somebody in hockey today. I was having a good conversation about the Sabres, and this person made a really good point. It's like, Sabres are like just a bunch of guys. Like, they haven't been able to find that. It's like, yeah, Paterka's great. Thompson's great. Cousins, good player. Dahlin and Power and Byram. Like, but it's just kind of like a bunch of guys. They haven't been able to find where everybody fits the best and put it all together.
Well, and when I'm looking at this, and the lines I'm looking at are from Monday, yeah, you don't want Benson, McLeod, Zucker as your second line, but that's having Cousins on your third line. That's J.J. Paterka being in scratched. That's Jack Quinn being scratched. So you look at this, and you think, if these, and this is part of the problem, this is going to get so philosophical, but this is part of the problem of going straight bare bones teardown, is then you have to go out and get a Zucker type. You have to go out and try to get a Greenway in, or a player of that ilk to kind of be the glue for this room for all these young players. And then in part, this is part of the problem I find anyways, when you do a full teardown, is you don't have that core of leaders showing the young group the way to go. Back to circle this all around. If I'm the Buffalo Sabres, what position do I need to address most? To me, it's probably a forward, but I would understand bringing in a defenseman in a deal like this as well.
So is there a forward that the same, like, would Kadri be of interest to them? And I'm not saying one way or the other. This is just me now spitballing. If we've already like answered a bunch of questions, right? We've answered he would be a good fit on the Flames, and you have to assume the Flames would be interested in him, and would be one of those teams. Like, there's probably many teams that have made calls on Cousins. That would be one. Number two, contract is fine. So now we're into the asking price. If we're both on the same page, that the Sabres would be looking for kind of a guy that would help them right now and a more established NHLer to make this deal happen. Would Kadri, if they're looking for a forward, would Kadri be the type of guy that could help them out? Would he be, with 5 years left on his deal, four after this year, would he be the type of guy that could be a centerpiece in a package? I don't know.
I mean, looking at what they need, Kadri would be their number one center. You could play Tage Thompson on the right side. Kadri comes in and is immediate toning culture center.
Is Thompson a center or a winger for you?
To me, right now, I think he's a center, but right now, I feel like getting him to the wing gets him back to simplifying and just one T clapper and score some goals. Let's get back to that 40 goal mark. Then we'll worry about moving you back in the middle. But you throw Kadri on that roster, he's their number one center, former Stanley Cup winner. I can't speak to being in that room day in, day out, even as a media member, but I imagine he would be immediately one of the top three tone setters for that organization. And again, addresses just an organizational who's going to play center under Lindy Ruff, because he commands so much at both ends. We haven't seen too many players there actually thrive down the middle outside of perhaps Ryan McLeod, who's a newcomer to the organization.
What, like,
I don't know. You'd definitely be tweaking the values. I mean, because the contract's roughly the same. The age certainly isn't, but for where Buffalo is right now and to where they need to be as soon as possible, I could see something like that, at least from this point of view, from the outside looking in, from the guy that doesn't have to actually pull the trigger on a deal, could see how it would make sense.
I wouldn't discount it as a possibility. I don't know if it would be the most likely possibility, just because we are talking about a like that. That would be you trading away a 23, soon to be 24 year old for a 34 year old set. Now there would obviously be more to it. I'd be looking, if they're looking forward, you feel like they'd be looking at something a little bit different, right? Like,
well, my preference would be somebody that's still in their 20s.
I don't know, so that would rule out Huberto.
Yeah, that would Kadri, that would
Coleman. So that would leave you with Sharon
Govich would be your biggest trade chip if you wanted to go that route.
Would they be interested in Azeri? Like, would that be the type of
guy? I don't think
guy?
I would be interested in Azeri from a Flames perspective.
If you're getting Cousins?
Yeah.
You do have to, like, who's the better player? I wouldn't be interested either.
For me right now, I think Connor Azeri is.
He's never scored 31, though.
And the flip side of this is I was going to be the other guy's on pace for 39 points. It's not like Zeri's on pace for a 60-point season, mm-hmm. but I don't feel Zeri's statistics have lined up with the output in terms of the scoring chances and the sheer electricity that he's brought to me.
I would try not to put him, like, I wouldn't be interested in that either. Like, I'd be looking to augment, right?
Well, and you probably have a little bit more cost control on Zeri right now. We don't know what the next contract looks like, but
if you could bring in, like, if you're bringing in a Cousins, then you could potentially move Zeri back to the wing.
Right.
And
I'm not interested
have a little
in dealing,
bit more offense from him there.
I'm not interested in dealing anybody under the age of 25 that's on an NHL roster, if I'm the Flames.
It probably, that's fair. Even if I'm getting another guy, like, you want to add more under 25-year-old guys to your number, I'm with you. I wouldn't put Zeri in there. So then we're left with Sharon Govich as potentially how interested is Buffalo in that guy and how much more would you have to add? And then the other guy that I think would make a ton of sense would be on the back.
Right.
How much would Rasmus Anderson bring you back? You know where I stand on Raz? I think he is the type of guy you want to keep, so I would not be... I would much rather the Flames look at a guy like, say in this hypothetical, Buffalo was like, yeah, we'd be interested in having this conversation, but Rasmus has to be on the other end of it. I'd say, not interested. Let's talk about Krebs. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I'd be more interested in them getting a middle six center that maybe isn't of the same caliber, same age range, but you don't give up a Rasmus Anderson.
If my phone rings and it's, hey, Cousins, you're interested, we would need Rasmus Anderson back, I would be saying, okay, what else are you sweetening the deal with on your end? Like, that's too much of a dice throw for me to include Rasmus Anderson in a deal for Cousins, because you don't know what Cousins is necessarily going to be rebound to. Can he get to a 1B? Is he going to top out as a winger? Is he ever going to make his way sort of back to the mill? I think that's being a little dramatic on the situation, but for now, he has been moved to the wing. That's too much of it. I need more assurance if I were to deal Rasmus Anderson, and I don't think Cousins gives me that reassurance that this is the right move to make.
And honestly, the more I think about it, I don't think Kadri would be their guy. I don't think Sharon Govich would move the needle all that much with the season he's having. I know he scored 30-plus last year, but he's really struggling this year.
Could be one of those change of scenery deals.
Yeah, but like, is that going to be enough for Buffalo to say, yeah, let's move on from a guy that we had pegged as part of our core? I don't think so. If they're looking for help right now, I don't think that gets it done on their end.
Would you rather have the mid-20s guy that scored 30 last year or the one that had 30 2 years ago?
I'd take Cousins all day.
Okay.
I'm
not necessarily disagreeing with you.
He's 3 years younger and scored 31 2 years ago. So I don't know if Buffalo's interested in that either. The only guy that probably does move the needle is Rasmus Anderson.
And he wouldn't be on the table for me.
And me neither. Unless we're going really pie in the sky, and now we're talking about one of their defensemen, too.
Unpredicted first, and... Well, it's almost...
No, I'm talking like all of a sudden, like, well, what about Cousins and Byram? Okay, well, now we're having an interesting conversation.
Now we're somewhere.
But I don't know if that's...
Almost like a
about.
Tweaked version of Dougie Hamilton for Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin.
But then we're getting a little bit...
There's only so
our,
many minutes in the day to talk about here. That one.
Let's read some text at 960-960. Julian on his way to Exha says, absolutely, Cousins has been the player who keeps coming to my mind for me the last two seasons when talking about young players, centermen around the league. He's the guy I keep thinking of. He would be happy to play for Calgary, being from Whitehorse, obviously, as we know. He played his junior hockey in Lethbridge
as well. The workhorse from Whitehorse?
The workhorse from Whitehorse. Chris says, Cousins' contract's a little scary given his fall off after his contract renewal, but if the cost now isn't too high given his play, roll the dice. Flames have no right shot centers and little center depth in the minors. The problem is, I don't know if you're going to be able to get him on a cut rate, and that's why this one feels like it might have to be a significant price paid. This reads, Dylan Cousins would be a perfect fit. They need a center. He's nice and young. He has potential to be a number one center. He can grow with the young core and help give the Flames some allure for others when pitching Calgary as a potential landing spot. What else we got here at 960-960? Miles says, Pat, I say Cousins for Kadri. I just don't think that would get it done.
Not that we're trying to run Kadri out of town.
Not at all.
Just a conversation.
This says lots of people here would love to see him play for the Flames. He has some close ties here. Definitely fits the mold. Big question is, would he want to be here? Conroy's game plan has been fill the roster with players motivated to be here. He probably wants to play somewhere sunny and hot. Well, I mean, he's from Whitehorse, so I don't know if that's the case or not. But I do know he's under contract for 5 more years at $7.1 million. So that also plays into it.
Don't sleep on Calgary. We get a lot of sun in the middle of winter.
This says, feels like Conroy, it's true, would end up overpaying for a kid whose offensive struggles would continue here because Ruff and Huska have very similar defensive-minded play. Is the juice worth the squeeze? Maybe in the summer when Adams maybe is more desperate and the cost might be more reasonable. That's not a bad idea. What else we got here at 960-960? Zeri and Rasmus for Byram and Cousins. You're welcome. That comes from Bill. Don't know if that gets it done. Neither does this one. Francis says, Huberto and 50% of the salary for Cousins. I don't think that gets it done either. Like, you're going to have to make it so there's a significant piece going back the other way as the centerpiece of a package and then go from there. There we go. Steinberg, Vickers, along with you this hour of Flames Talk is underway. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Tuesday edition of the program rolls on, and it's time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, in 10 periods since being put together on a line once again for the third period in that loss to Pittsburgh, Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau have combined for 9 points in just over 3 games. 5 points for Huberdeau, 4 points for Kadri. Guys, how much of a positive development is that over the last week or so, knowing how that line, any line that Kadri and Huberdeau have been on together, never seems to have really worked in the past? How much of a positive is it that we're seeing them put together a little success here over the last 3-plus games?
Well, very positive. I mean, Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri are the two highest paid players in the team, and they are currently tied for the team lead in points with 17. So it's been a combination that has worked at least of late. Now, chemistry can be a funny thing, and I asked Nazem Kadri about it earlier today. Basically said, hey, in the first couple of the seasons you guys were teammates, whenever you were on a line together, it didn't look like there was a lot there, but now it looks like there might be some chemistry there. And he said they didn't have a ton of time together the last two seasons, and that he's felt good playing not only with Jonathan Huberdeau this season, but also with Martin Pospisil, who has brought his game up a level or two of late. And he plays in some ways similarly to the way Nazem Kadri plays. Both guys have to be on the edge to be at their best. And I think Jonathan Huberdeau is playing his best 200-foot hockey as a member of the Calgary Flames right now. So it's been not just a good duo, but I would say a good trio of late.
Yeah, Wilsey, for the reasons you mentioned, it's imperative that at some point when they're put together, they find success. You mentioned the contract situation, and both of them are the highest paid players. You mentioned that they're sharing the team lead in points at 17. Huberto leads the Flames with 9 goals. Kadri second at 8. And when you unite them together, you kind of expect to see the things that they should be bringing that the contracts dictate. And I understand Jonathan Huberto hasn't necessarily done that to this point in his Flames tenure, but we've seen Nazem Kadri play a lot of good hockey with the Flames. And for me, Kadri was turning the corner a little bit before being, I don't want to say reunited, but more placed with Huberto. And that's continued to flourish with Huberto on his wing. And I think from Huberto's perspective, really good start to the season, really strong, a lot of reason for optimism. And then it fell off a little bit, and he's starting to get back to his earlier season success. And I think a lot of that is because he's playing, in my opinion anyways, playing a little bit less east-west and a little bit more north-south in the style that the system more dictates. And so when you start doing it, approaching it that way, and you've got Nazem Kadri, who's a very direct player, I think at least in part, that's where you're seeing the mesh a little bit more than past seasons. And yeah, it's absolutely imperative. The guys in the locker room want to have any ambitions of being a playoff team come the spring. You need a lot of that to fall on the shoulders of two of your leaders, two of your key offensive contributors in Kadri and Huberto.
Well, so there's a few things here as to why I think it is a promising thing, albeit over a very short period of time. It's quite promising because, guys, it's been quite some time since the Flames have had a top line, and I know that one of the things they've tried to do over the last two seasons and now into a third is be a team that is based on depth and being able to kind of like roll three similar lines and you know, not a lot of separation between their top three forward lines, but it hasn't necessarily worked. Right. It hasn't necessarily made them a difficult team to play against on a regular basis, as they've missed the playoffs the last 2 years. And you know, they've been a very, very tough out so far for the most part this year. But I do think having a line that you can say is clearly a top line, well, that's something that's really important. And one that you say, like, yeah, there's not really a whole lot of debate, like who you write down as number one on your depth chart. Whereas over the last, even for a good chunk of this year, you could have real salient debates about, okay, well, if you're tweeting out lines, if you're writing down lines, who's your one, who's your two, who's your three, and you could make arguments for any one of those three to be anywhere on the rundown. So if Kadri and Huberto start working and start producing and being a group that or being a duo and you add Pospisil on there on the right, and that can be a line that gives you some consistent offense, that's a big step forward. I'll just give you the numbers since those two specifically, Kadri and Huberto, have been put together. And I'm not leaving out Pospisil for disrespectful reasons at all, but I'm a big duos guy, and I think if you could have your two highest paid players turn into a forward duo, that could be a real positive thing for this group. And since they have been put together on a line, I'll leave out the Pittsburgh game. So the last three games, at 5-on-5, Huberto and Kadri together, 62.2% in terms of their 5-on-5 possession, 64.5% expected goals. High danger chances are 12-7 when those two guys are on the ice together. Like, it's worked. They've been fed a lot of offensive zone starts, which I'm fine with. That's what you want to see them doing. So I guess, long story short, gents, I think this could be a real positive thing. Problem is, or not the problem is, but the thing is, it's been three games, or just over three games. Now start doing this on a regular basis. And if that happens, Wilsey, I think that's a really big positive for this group going forward.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Pat. When tweeting out lines, it's been tough at times this year to number the lines 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty clear who the fourth line has been. But, you know, with that said, that group's been the most effective line on some nights for the Flames. But, yeah, as far as the top nine is concerned, it's been tough to number the lines, but it's not right now. Clearly, the Kadri between Huberto and Pospisil line is the Flames' number one line and playing like a number one line. And I give Jonathan Huberto a lot of credit. I really think that he's evolved as a player, and he's never going to be the 115-point guy that he was in his last season with the Panthers, and that is what it is. But for me, he's way better away from the puck. He's way better defensively. He's way more physically engaged. He's doing a much better job getting to the middle of the ice and getting to the front of his opponent's net right now. And I think that's been a huge development for the Flames. And Nazem Kadri's back to playing how he has for most of his time with the Flames. I think he got away from it for a little while there. Maybe he was battling through something, but he's been much better of late. And Martin Pospisil is starting to figure it out. I mean, he had 8 hits on Sunday night in Dallas. And I know the Flames lost that game by 4, but I thought it was maybe his best game of the season, his most impactful game of the season. So those three guys have been really good together, and they're probably going to have to be against a desperate Predators team tonight. Yep.
And no doubt, I mean, Pospisil's hit on Jamie Benn sets up the first goal. He has 8 hits, by far the most in the game. So, yeah, that was a very positive night for Martin Pospisil, too. See if he can keep that going.
Tied for second most in his career, by the way.
Yeah, like that's yeah. Now, is he going to do that every night? No, but I also thought he was. It wasn't just the hits. It was the forecheck, and you saw a whole lot more in terms of the jets on when he was forechecking. That's when he creates turnovers. That's when he sets the tone for his line. That's when he creates space for his line. So, yeah, more of that, the better if you're the Flames. So, Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Tuesday. Guys, I'm curious as to where we are. I think we can all agree that goaltending and specifically Dustin Wolf, maybe not as strong over the last week or two as it was prior in the season. They're still a top 10 group in terms of their team save percentage. They've dropped to number 8, though, at a 901 team save percentage. Jensen's is, has Calgary's goaltending regressed and come back down to earth? Or are we just talking about a few rough starts specifically for Dustin? I'm curious as to how you see this goaltending as of right now.
Yeah, I do think it's come back down to earth a little bit. With that said, there's also been a tremendous amount of pressure on the two goaltenders because the Flames have had a tough time scoring goals. I mean, 25 straight games with 3 or fewer goals, it's tied for the 5th longest streak in the history of the league. And, you know, this is a pretty good team, and they can win a lot of 3-2 games or 2-1 games, but eventually you're going to have to score more than 3 to win. And even when you do get to 3, it's still putting a lot of pressure on those two guys because they must feel like they can't give up one bad or even iffy goal to give their team a chance to win. But the reason I say it's come back down to earth is Dustin Wolf is in his first season as a full-time NHLer, and Dan Vladar is in his first season as a 1A or a 1B. He's been a clear number 2 behind Jacob Markstrom prior to this season. So I did not expect the Flames to have one of the best goaltending tandems in the NHL. And I didn't expect Dustin Wolf to complete the season with a 926 save percentage, which is where he was prior to this last 3-game stretch. He had given up a total of 4 goals in 4 games prior to giving up, well, let me do the math, 14 goals in his last 3 starts. Now, I don't think Dustin Wolf is going to continue to give up that many goals, but then again, I don't think he's going to get back to being a guy who gives up 1 per game either. There's probably a happy medium in there somewhere. But, you know, for me, the Flames struggles more so on the road, obviously, than at home because they've got a 7-game point streak at home and a 8-game losing streak on the road. It isn't about the goaltenders. I think for the most part, both Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar, they've given the guys a chance to win each and every night this season. They just need some help offensively. If the Flames can even get to 1 more goal per game or a half more goal per game moving forward, I think it takes a lot of pressure off the goaltenders and the team as a whole. So, yeah, I do think that the goaltending, more so Wolf than Vladar, has regressed a little bit, but I was almost expecting that to happen. But for me, the reason the Flames are losing isn't Wolf and Vladar. They just need some more offense, fellas.
Yeah, I can completely understand their sort of, I don't even want to call it mental fatigue because I can't really necessarily point to anything specifically about that. But when you're only giving them 3 goals per game, almost like clockwork, that's not a lot of wiggle room for mistakes, as you mentioned, Willsy. And there's going to be ebbs and flows in the season where one or both guys go on, you know, extended quality runs. And other times there are going to be runs where perhaps the save percentage or the quality starts aren't necessarily where you want them to be. But to me, this is still, and I don't know if this is kind of a chicken or the egg scenario, but to me, this is very much a home road sort of conundrum, because even if you look at the past 9 home games for the Flames, 7 of those goaltenders have given them north of 900 save percentage. 6 of those have been 931 or higher. But then on the flip side, 2 of the past 3 have been 833, 870, respectfully, sandwiched around a Dan Vladar shutout. So there's that sort of element. But then you look at 4 of the past 5 road games, they've been 879 or lower. So I don't know if this is an ebb and flow that just happens to sort of coincide a little bit with road struggles for the team in front of them as a whole, or if it's a goaltending dip that's causing those road struggles. But for me, I still feel like the Calgary Flames have gotten quality goaltending for the most part. It just so happens that we've seen the team in front of them collapse a little bit on the road of late, causing sort of these dramatic splits.
Yeah, I mean, I think them being where they were, and where they were was kind of like one of the top
elite
3 or 4 goaltending tandems in the NHL. I did wonder if that might be something that would be in the unsustainable category. Not because I don't believe in Vladar and Wolf. I actually have got a lot of belief in both guys, but you know, as you mentioned, Wilsey, both guys are playing NHL workload unlike anything they've ever experienced before. There was always in my mind a good chance there was going to be a little bit of a step back. What I think is important is the Flames continuing to get competent NHL goaltending on a nightly basis. And I still think they're getting that. I give Dan Vladar a lot of credit. You know, he has been a very consistent goalie this year. Has he been a high-end goalie? No, he wouldn't be up in the upper echelon of goalies, but he's been very consistent. His game has been very steady, and he's just, when he's in there, you know you've got an opportunity. And that, to me, is something that I think is a real calming presence. And I think Wolf was doing that for them earlier, but the last 3 starts, and they've all been on the road for Wolf, which is interesting, 867, 879, 786 in terms of his save percentage the last 3 games. So there's no doubt that it's dipped a little bit. I do wonder a little bit if that is because they've kind of eased off on the Wolf going the home games, Vladar getting a lot of the road games. I wonder if that plays a little bit into it, but I still think the Flames are getting and will continue to get competent NHL goaltending. And that's one thing that I think, anyway, we're approaching the 30-game mark here, Wilsey. I think if you were to say, what are some of the things the Flames have done and kind of, I don't know, forged as their identity this year, there are a few things that I think that you can point to that I think we will see be sustainable. Hard work, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Strong team defense, I think that is also pretty fair. They don't give you a whole lot, and I think that is going to continue to be one of their hallmarks. And then number 3, I think they've gotten some solid goaltending, and I think that that is a sustainable thing. Are they going to get elite goaltending? Is this going to be Swayman and Ullmark from last year? Yeah, maybe not. But competent, solid goaltending? I think that's fair to expect going forward, even though Wolf has had a few games in a row that weren't so good.
Yeah, I expect they'll get good goaltending. And again, I wouldn't fault the goalies for what's happened of late. I know he gave up a career-high 6 on Sunday, but I don't hang that game on Dustin Wolf. Yeah. Flames just stopped playing in the third period in that 6-2 loss to the Stars. And it should be a good night for the Flames goaltenders. It was a very optional morning skate at Bridgestone Arena here in Nashville today. But Dustin Wolf was on the ice and Dan Vladar was not. So we do expect Vladar to get the start versus the Predators. He has never lost a game in regulation against the Preds. He's 2-0-1. And if it is Wolf, I don't think it will be, but if it is, he stopped all 29 shots in a 2-0 victory over the Predators back on November 15th in his only career game against the team. So I like their chances against a Predators team that has scored 2 or fewer goals. If you think the Flames are having a tough time scoring, take a look at the Predators. 2 or fewer goals during their 7-game losing streak. They are dead last in the NHL in goals for per game at 2.18. They'll be desperate tonight, so maybe tonight's their night. But, hey, maybe tonight is the Flames' night.
We will talk to you on the roundtable on Wednesday, Wilsey. We'll see what they do in Nashville tonight, see if they can indeed snap that 8-game road losing skid. Have a good rest of your Tuesday, my friend. Thank you, as always.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
He is Derek Wills. He is Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam and Shan, our producers, and that's your Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.